Hello and welcome to this podcast, which accompanies the September 2012 issue of the BJS. I'm Wendy Barnaby, and today we'll be talking about wound healing. And oh, to be selling dressings for wounds, defying the recession, with sales that are increasing in the UK by 7% a year. From basic wound contact dressings through advanced dressings involving hydrogels and hydrocolloids to antimicrobial and specialist dressings, it's big business. But is this a victory for effectiveness or advertising? Do designer dressings promote healing and stop wounds becoming infected? Here to discuss these and other questions are Dr. Simon Porfreman from the Sheffield Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust, Dr. Dirk Ubink from the Academic Medical Centre in Amsterdam, and Katie Walter, Surgical Registrar from the Queen's Medical Centre in Nottingham. Simon, can we turn to you first? Can you give me a brief rundown of the most important issues in wound healing?
Depends on whose point of view you're taking. So I think different things will matter to different people, depending on whether you're selling the dressings, whether you're a clinician using the dressings, or whether you're on the receiving end of the dressing. You know, if you're a clinician sort of deciding on what dressing to use, you would hope that you would be able to base that on the best available evidence, and that evidence would be high quality. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. Much of the evidence out there with regarding dressings is very poor. It merely consists of case series or very, very small randomised control trials where, you know, the outcomes being measured can sometimes be very subjective rather than hard outcome measures such as wound healing.
What would surgeons achieve, do you think, if decisions about dressings were based on scientific evidence?
If the choice of dressing was based on scientific evidence, then, you know, we would have very limited choice of dressings, because there's very few dressings out there that have really good scientific evidence to justify their widespread use. I can think of antimicrobial dressings, honey dressings amongst them, where the randomised control trials that have been conducted show that these advanced expensive dressings are no better than the cheaper non-advanced dressings.
Right. Well, look, here are two papers on evidence and wounds. So let's turn to Dirk first for the highest level of evidence so far available on how wounds are treated. Dirk, you were part of the team which looked at the results from all of the Cochrane systematic reviews of interventions in wound care. What were you trying to achieve?
Well, in the first place, we've been doing research for about the last 12 years, and it was not difficult to find that there is a huge variation in the number of dressing materials and topical agents available, a huge variation in opinions among doctors and nurses involved in wound care, and a huge amount of literature available, of which Simon already said that it's usually not a very high standard of methodological rigor. So what we wondered, if there is really some strong evidence available regarding local and systemic wound care for patients with either acute or chronic wounds.
Right. Now, you did find that the way surgeons treat wounds does vary hugely, as you said. I mean, some treatments based on quite robust evidence, and some seems to be just based on opinion. So what sorts of wounds are backed up by strong evidence in the way they should be treated?
Well, I think there are interventions that seem to be supported by strong evidence for nearly every kind of wound, both for acute and for chronic wounds. So, for instance, we know for burns that silver sulfadiazine has been used for decades, but we have realized now, looking at the evidence, that it's not really useful to help heal those wounds. Rather, local honey could be a better alternative, because the silver sulfadiazine seems to be quite toxic and limits the wound healing.
So the problem is not that there's a lack of evidence, but that there is evidence and it's just not being used.
Yes, that's one of the main reasons that we are not up to date regarding the evidence we are using in clinical practice.
Yeah, so what sort of trials would you like to see in future?
Well, obviously, we need stronger evidence than the bulk of evidence we have now. So I'm lucky to say that we last month were able to publish a paper in wound repair and regeneration together with several members of the European Wound Management Association that focuses on items that are really essential in doing proper research, especially in randomized clinical trials. So we made up a kind of framework to make sure that we have a more uniform and high-level means and design of future RCTs in wound care.
Well, thank you very much, Dirk. And talking of RCTs, let's now turn to Katie. Katie, you've done a study of all the evidence from randomized controlled trials evaluating the effects of dressings on surgical wounds. What did you find?
Yes, Wendy. Primarily, we wanted to assess whether the type of dressing we used impacted on the number of surgical site infections that occurred in the post-operative period. But we also looked at other factors that dressings might bring, such as impacts on scars or pain or acceptability of the dressing. This systematic review only included randomised control trials since our question really looked at the effectiveness of one treatment compared to its alternative, and we felt this was the most appropriate way for reducing bias.
So what did you find?
We did a comprehensive literature review and found 16 trials with data from about 2,594 patients that spanned a variety of surgical types and wound contamination levels. And interestingly, in our British National Formulary, we have over 14 categories of different types of wound dressing, but these trials only actually looked at three of those categories: the basic wound contact dressing, the hydrocolloid dressing, and the film dressing. So we looked at those dressing types, and then obviously, as I mentioned earlier, the exposed wounds. Now, we found the same as Dirk has already mentioned, that many of these studies were small. Three of the studies we included were deemed of relatively high risk of bias. But despite this, we found that there was no evidence that covering a surgical wound that was healing by primary intention with a wound dressing would in fact reduce the rate of a surgical site infection, nor that any particular wound dressing reduced that infection rate more than another. And additionally, when we looked at those secondary outcomes of scars, pain and acceptability, we again found no difference between the treatment groups.
It's really an extraordinary conclusion, isn't it, when you think of how much money's being spent on surgical dressings. And to put a number on that, I think it was $135 million in NHS primary care alone in 2011. How do you explain that conclusion?
Yes, it is an extraordinary amount of money. And I think there's traditionally been this belief that if we cover a wound with a dressing, that can protect the wound against contamination from environmental sources and subsequent surgical site infections. And I think with recent publicity surrounding both hospital cleanliness and also hospital-acquired infections, patients really may have a fear of developing surgical site infections as a result of environmental contamination, and believe that a dressing will help prevent this. Although, as we know from our work, there's no evidence to support addressing and in reducing post-operative wound infection rates.
What dressing would you prefer, Katie, if you'd had clean surgery?
Well, with regard to my own body, I'm a little bit squeamish about seeing wounds on my body, so I would want my wound covered so I didn't have to look at it. And by covering it, I'd hope that the wound edges and the stitches were protected from getting caught on my clothes. I'd hope that the wound dressing had an absorbent property so that exudate from my wound didn't stain my bed sheets or my clothes. And I'd also hope it was waterproof so I could shower in the normal way. And then once I'd got these qualities, I'd want it to be comfortable to wear and easy to put on and remove. And after that, I would probably pick the cheapest dressing.
Dirk, what sort of dressing would you have in similar circumstances, do you think?
Well, it's an interesting discussion because we're now about to formulate our national guideline on wound care, in which the same discussion was performed, what to cover our post-operative primary closed wounds with. We said, well, why cover it anyway? Because there's no evidence that any dressing will benefit wound healing. Only thing is that if there is any leakage, it would be much more comfortable to put a simple dressing on it only in those cases. So if it was my choice, I would not put anything on my wound unless it would be somewhat leaking and would cover the wound so that my clothes would not be contaminated.
Well, thank you very much to both. And now back to you, Simon. What messages do you think that these papers have got for surgeons?
I think the key message that it has for surgeons is that, you know, they need to make decisions based on, unfortunately, it's been mentioned before, cost, because we can't make any decisions based on really effectiveness. I think the key message is that there's very little difference between most of the dressings out there, and that if the surgeons are approached by companies selling a new improved super-duper dressing, then they need to look at the evidence very carefully.
right now. That's the surgeons. And what about messages for commissioners of healthcare or governments?
I mean, the obvious and simple message is that, you know, governments could save some money by going for the cheapest dressing. But, you know, I would advocate that sometimes, you know, cheaper may not be the best if there's compromise in terms of the material and the dressing isn't adhesive and it has to be replaced because it's not very absorbent. It may be that the super duper cheap dressing becomes more expensive because you're having to use more of them. So I think it needs careful evaluation of dressings rather than relying on what you're being told by manufacturers.
Well, thank you, Simon, very much indeed for that. And thank you again to you all. And that's all for this time. We hope you'll join us again.